Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
Toyota of Brookhaven has been voted best new car dealership in Southwest Mississippi 4 years in a row. Come see the difference. Exit 40 Brookhaven or online at toyotabrookhaven.com. Great service, great savings. At Toyota of Brookhaven, we deliver.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between. Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal, on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome, welcome, welcome. Hello, hello, and my goodness, isn't it green out there? I don't know if y'all have seen this, but this has been the best year the roses have had in ages. But even better than the roses are the leaves around the roses. They're beautiful. Peggy Martin burst into bloom in my front garden. And I have to tell you, for a rose that I have saved more than once, that is the toughest thing I have ever grown. She cannot be defeated, I don't believe. Knock on wood. I hope that's true, because she literally climbed into the magnolia tree and got strangled. And then I took the rose. You know how hard it is to take a rose out of a tree? My goodness, I should do more things in timely fashion. But she's blooming today and absolutely beautiful. Good morning, Lance.
Good morning. I love that it says the yard you hate to mow. And that's the best therapy on the planet.
It's good therapy.
Especially if you have like a zero turn and quality product. You just out there ride around.
One of my favorite sounds is that chink, chink, click, click that came from my granddaddy's push mower, literal push mower.
Oh, yeah. I push mowered enough on a 3-acre lot. I don't ever want to do that again. Back in the old days.
He had downsized from the farm to the backyard.
My dad was a notorious tinkerer on a Saturday or a Sunday. He would come get you. Get up, boy. We have work to do. And you get out there and the lawnmower wouldn't crank or this wouldn't work. And you'd spend the first 3 hours watching him fix stuff. And you'd be like, come on, man, let me go do something else. We're about to get to work here. And, so the whole day. And then you'd get going. And then he'd say, all right, why don't you use the push mower? And then he'd get on the other one, and my mom would get on, so it's like, man, I don't ever want to push mow again. But I have. Mm-hmm. It's just not my favorite. I do enjoy, though.
I love that sound. And I actually like the bit of exercise that it takes, as long as the space isn't too large, just because it's walking.
Well, and if it's not hilly, too.
Here in the flatlands, I don't have too much of that.
Yeah, you're good. Your yard's perfect for
Belhaven it. Belhaven yesterday, we were up higher up than I've been in Jackson in a long time. We actually got to go downhill to avoid some construction.
Yeah, there are some good hills over there. If you're going on a jog in the Fondren, Belhaven area,
careful.
Man, it's pretty
know where
hilly.
You're going.
Yeah, it's hilly.
At any rate, we know that the rest of y'all who actually live in the hills of our listening area are laughing right now.
Yeah, flatlanders.
They all have, what are those things called? They look like skateboards, but they have the one wheel under them.
The uniboard,
whatever that is. They all have that. They're going downhill and uphill and all around, all over the place.
I can't wait for the invention of my youth, which I was a... you grow up with Michael J. Fox and then Back to the Future, but the hoverboard. Like a real one that you just hover around, you could just charge it.
You know it has to work. I mean, there's got to be somebody out there right now with the prototype.
I mean, the one that does all that his does, that's the one I want. I was never a great skateboarder. I think the four wheels are what kind of got in the way of that. So the hover side, I could pull that off, I believe.
I think so.
I could snowboard, but skateboarding was tough. No. So I'm looking for the hoverboard. I'm waiting for it.
The orthopedists of my entire life laugh every time I consider those things. Listen now, got a great question on the text this morning, y'all. Here is the question, and I know this has happened to more than just this person. What has happened to my Cherokee purple tomato plant? Okay, this is a 4-inch pot. It's got a tomato plant in it that's maybe 4 inches tall and just a little bit wider than that. But the leaves have begun to lose. They're yellow. They're a little bit brown on the edges, and they're actually chlorotic, which means that you can see the vein, but the rest of the leaf is yellow and the vein is green. Okay, so what had happened was... I love that. I love that Southern expression. What had happened was, it was thriving before the storms, and a few weeks ago when I put them in the garage to protect them from the wind, hadn't there been a lot of that, 2 days later, I put them on the back patio. Although they had been in the sun, I'm wondering if the shock was too much. Other varieties did a little better. Wanted to get them into the ground today, but with the rain coming, should I wait until it's over and the ground's a little drier? If your soil is workable right now, this is a great time to get this particular plant in particular. If you slip this out of its container, I'll bet you it's got roots all the way out to the four corners of that pot. And what that tells you is that it has literally begun to be unable to get the nutrients that were in the soil because its roots are too tight, or because it got set back and the roots have not regenerated yet. Either of those things are going to happen a little bit quicker in the new environment where you're actually going to grow the plant. So I would suggest take off the lower leaves, because I'm going to do that anyway, but cut off the little pieces that are not so great. And I might plant this one at the far end of the planting as opposed to putting it in the middle with all the other plants. Just in case we've got a touch of blight here, we'd like to be able to handle this one by itself. I don't think that's what this is. And I think a little fertilizer and a new planting spot. I will tell you, if you're transplanting today, and I'm doing some of that myself, I do suggest that you put some mulch around those new plantings. And what we've got is a really crazy weather forecast. Might rain a whole lot, might not rain at all, depends on where you are. And that really defines what mulch is all about in every setting. Mulch is there not only to look nice, although that does help, but it keeps the soil surface from getting too wet or too dry. It acts as a buffer. It acts as a moderating agent. And those things are real important, particularly when you're trying to keep plants either from A, washing out of the ground, as a young little seedling might do in a very heavy storm, or from drying out entirely if it doesn't rain for a week and you forget. So we try to take advantage of all that with our mulch. But I think you're going to do fine. The center of the plant looks great, and it's really quite lovely. Good morning, Trey. Trey is cracking me up. For those of you who are able to join us at supertalk.tv, you will be getting some of his humor this morning. I feel confident. Good morning, Thomas and Macomb. Thanks for checking in. And let's see now. Oh, my goodness. This is great. Barnardo's in Louisiana, and these are just beautiful pictures. Really, really lovely. All the potatoes came up. Thank you very much. Well, all but four, but this is a bunch of red potato plants. For those of you who don't happen to know, the little red potato that most of us really appreciate, we appreciate in specific because of one of my professors at LSU. And it is the red Lasota. L.A. for La, Louisiana, da-da. Anyway, it's a little red potato, and it's a really, really great one developed by Dr. Fontenot. And those of us who have loved it forever are just so glad to see it everywhere, because that tells you that what a great breeding project all that was. We would not have that one. That, you know how you go in and you see the bag of potatoes and they're red potatoes, but they're as big as your fist and you're not sure? Well, that's because they're not in that particular variety is not intended to be picked as what we know as a new potato, the baby potatoes that we like so much. Fun stuff. Oh, this is beautiful. Terry's in Boca Chica. See, there's one of those roses I'm talking about. And this is rooted from an antique in a graveyard, and it smells so good. It is magnificent. That is just beautiful. Thanks for sending it, and congratulations on growing it, too. Okay, let's see about the tomato. We got a new tomato question. Let me look at this closely. This looks like it could be blight, yes. And if it is a lower leaf on the plant, I would suggest that you immediately take off it and the ones right next to it particularly if there's anything that's been touching the soil, or if they're in a position where the soil could wash up onto the leaves, you'd like to get those leaves off. That's another case of rainy weather, and one of the reasons why we use mulch. There's always early blight in the soil, and if it washes up onto the leaf and under the right conditions, it causes us problems. This could be what this is. It really does. It's possible it's weather, but it looks more like the beginnings of blight. So I'm going to pluck all of that off and put some mulch around the plants so that hopefully it doesn't happen again. Ah, the red ones are beautiful. My goodness. But the pink climbing rose is overcome with black spot. And in spite of weekly fungicide spraying, is there any saving the plant, or do I need to take it down? Well, there's always the case that if you don't want to fool with it, you can take it down. And sometimes if you take it down and put it in more sun than it's in, but it looks to me like it's in full sun, sometimes that will help. But black spot is a greater problem on some varieties than on others. And as a result, it doesn't always happen even in the same year in two roses next to each other, because one is just more vulnerable than the other. My suggestions for this are several. If you're using a fungicide weekly, change fungicides and rotate them. Or not change them, but get another one and rotate them. You also want to make sure that you don't have any other pest problems that are weakening the plant and therefore causing it to be more vulnerable to the black spot and to any other pests that might be around. So check for that. And at this point, I think that when it finishes blooming, I would prune it back a good chunk, because that's really the time to prune climbing roses, is right after they flower. And then when the new growth begins, that's really the growth to spray to inoculate it against black spot. What people do who have a rose that they really want to keep because they love the flowers, but they also know that the black spot is a big problem, they will oftentimes give themselves an inoculation schedule and basically just start spraying the fungicide as soon as the leaves begin emerging, and do it all the way until the plant is fully leafed out. Sometimes that helps, sometimes it doesn't, and that does come down to a matter of which variety it is. Okay. Very good. I took the leaves off and banished that plant to another area. Good job. We talk about that all the time. If you've ever been to a commercial greenhouse, you've probably seen that there are areas that you're not allowed to walk into. And often those are areas where there are plants that either have just arrived or have gone into some form of decline in the situation right there on the bench. So they're moved out in case there's a problem that could spread from one plant to another. So that's many times why those plants are isolated. And sometimes they're isolated because they're recovering, and sometimes they're isolated because you don't know if they're going to recover, but you don't want any kind of fungus to push out, you know, spores and end up infecting other plants on the bench. But you also don't necessarily want them to be where your customers are going to wander into them and want to buy that plant if you don't know for sure that it's healthy. So that's happening. Another thing that we put up on superdoc.tv today, and if you would like the list and aren't able to happen to see it, get your pen and paper ready, because I'll be going through this list today. These are annuals recommended by our friends at Cooperative Extension, and I agree with them for dry locations. In my case, it's the front corner of my front garden bed. It's about the hottest, driest place in my property, but you probably have spaces too. I really love that they added copper plant to the list, and that they also have put in amaranth, because those are two of my favorites. So we'll talk about those as the morning goes along. If you've got questions about it, I'll be more than happy to address those. The lemon tree is more, I have to say, we get to this point in the spring and you say, thank goodness I can take those plants outside and leave them for the summer. Well, sometimes we do and sometimes we don't. When it was so windy and my lemon tree was just beginning to bloom, even though the temperatures were right, I rolled it back in again. So that means that since last about October, that lemon tree has been rolled in and out of my house probably 6 times, which is way too many. that's more attention than some of my animals get. But it has paid off. There are not only lemons already formed on the tree, but there are more flowers yet to open. So it looks as if I will have 2 crops this year, and that would just be spectacular. Why did this happen? I really think that the moderation that citrus requires is why we don't do as well with it in zone 8, except maybe for kumquats. But even the varieties that survive have to go through so much stress if they are outside and planted in the ground, that I think growing them, most of the varieties, not everything, most of the varieties in containers is just a better idea. And the dolly with the wheels on it, in this case it's a caster. They have casters on this round tray that I can then fit my saucer on and the tree on. They'll roll in and out of the house pretty easily. Not that easily. Pretty easily. No quick move here. You have to think about it. But trying to keep that moderated environment for the tree has paid off, and I hope it will continue to. Plus, now it smells so good that I can't bear to not be next to it all the time. So I'm working on that point of view, trying to get myself past that. The Night Blooming Sirius Rescue Project is going well. I'm surprised, and I'm happy to tell you, this is a plant that has literally been in the hands of better growers than me for maybe 40 years, maybe longer. I don't know. But it has come to me for care. And, well, it's looking pretty good. I've got some new growth on it. Didn't have to prune off too much. It just had been in a sad state for a little while, not for lack of care, but just because there was just so much else that the individual that was tending to it had to take care of, that it hadn't been repotted. And we don't repot those but every 5 years or so anyway. So, but this gigantic plant is now doing pretty well, kind of happy. I don't know. I'm hopeful that it will bloom this summer. We will see about that. I did come up with the best propagating. I had to do a little work because I've got to propagate this thing. You know, there are two kinds of leaves on night blooming cereus, and many people look at the round things that pop up off the side and they wonder what that is and should I leave it. Eventually, it does flatten out in most cases. And of course, it also oftentimes makes a Y and splits. And that Y, when it matures, is one of the best places to get cuttings from. So I'm working on that. And you probably are too if you grow those plants. This is the time of year when we really worry about them. Oh, this is lovely. Really, really pretty. Good on you. This is really wonderful. Thank you, Mary. These are so pretty. Popcorn drift roses. I love there's the red rose, and then there's these popcorn drifts that are lower, and they're really very beautiful. The yellow and white, and one is pink and white. That's so pretty. I love drift. I think they're really a very handy rose to have because, well, I'll speak softly in case he's listening. Even my neighbors look good, and he doesn't do very much to them. They were well planted. His daughter was a landscape architect. They were well planted. They were well installed, and he doesn't mess with them. Now, they're taller than most people want those roses to be, but that's okay, too. So, as long as he likes it. Have you grown sorrel yet, is the question. Well, of course you've grown sorrel. You can't get away from it. It is one of my very favorite little quote-unquote weeds, unquote. You know, it's oxalis. It's a little shamrock, as it were. Has pink flowers on it. It's wood sorrel. Do you know people eat that sometimes? It's a little toxic for me, but on the other hand, it's real citrusy. I'm thinking about putting it in some pepper vinegar. What do you think? Now, come on now. We got a lot to do. This is the Garden Mama Show.
Sammy the Shovel here for Mississippi 811, reminding you that April is National Safe Digging Month. The leading cause of harm in residential areas is underground utility damage. And while pipeline operators and other underground utility companies are committed to raising awareness of underground damage prevention, homeowners have a responsibility to ensure safe digging practices too. Mississippi 811 reminds you to call 811 at least 3 working days before any dig to ensure your DIY project is done safely. Listen to Sammy. You dig?
Hello, I'm Sean Tindall, Commissioner of the Mississippi Department of Public Safety. Since 2021, Mississippi has seen a 25% reduction in fatalities involving crashes with commercial motor vehicles. Many of those crashes could have been avoided. DPS, through its MHP's Motor Carrier Unit and the Commercial Transportation Enforcement Division, is partnering with Big Rig Truckers to conduct safety checks across our state for the Trooper and Trucker Safety Initiative. The Department of Public Safety and the Federal Motor Carrier Safety Administration are working together to keep our highways safe for everyone. Thank you, and drive safely.
You ever notice how we have plans for rainy days, you know, particularly gardeners, because gardeners think, well, I got to get this done today because it's going to rain tomorrow. Well, then it doesn't rain, and you still have to get out and water, and you still have to do the next thing on the list. But when it does get to be a rainy day, what do we gardeners do? Sit around and clean containers and mix potting soil? No. No. We plan for the next thing. Red is now looking for Jamaican sorrel seeds. We've all got another, the next thing we want to look at, the next thing we want to do. And I've got one for you. Here's a good suggestion I hope you will take. If your lawn has just not been right, if it has, you know, a greater population of plants you don't want growing in there, or if it just has never quite greened up as much as you wanted, even though you fertilized it, that sort of stuff, this is really a great time of year to do a soil test and see whether or not you need to apply lime. If your pH is off, which many of ours are off because that's the nature of the actual soil that we live on, it's hard for turf grass to grow as well as some other things that would like to take the space that it is in. So, if you can feed the lawn, get the lawn limed and get the pH right, then when you feed the lawn grass can actually use the fertilizer. And that makes a thicker, healthier, happier lawn. Do that. Get in touch with your county agent's office, or a large garden center in your area can probably also direct you to the soil test kits. It's not an expensive process, and it's one that you'll be really glad that you have done. Barnado, all these Japanese plums are lovely. My goodness, I do love that plant. Pretty thing. We've seen some freezing damage on lots of these plants. We don't think of Japanese plums or loquats as being necessarily not hardy, the trees themselves in zone 8 and pretty far north into zone 8. But they do maybe don't make their fruit because you don't have enough long ripening season. They'll grow and make fruit, but they don't necessarily get to the point of being as ripe as they will, say, in Louisiana where Varnado is. But it's a beautiful tree anyway, and it's one of those things that has a nice stiff, probably the reason it's also called alligator pear, even though it's neither an alligator or a pear, is because it has these really thick, ridgy leaves on it that are just beautiful, and that's a nice thing to have in the garden in any case. Greg, I like this. In Yazoo County, he's been... who doesn't like it when someone says, I took your advice, and then they don't say, and it didn't work. And it did work. The really old, not as old as me, but almost as old as me, azalea, and it just had gotten drought ravaged and damaged all last year. 100 degrees doesn't help, you know, all those things. And eventually he figured out that he needed to cut it back. So he cut it back as I had advised him to do, but he said he had to cut some of it way back to find any green on those stems. He did find it, though. And now the big stems that are left under there had green coming out from the bark. From the base, there also are new shoots coming out. I love this. It looks really like it's the future. It's going to go another 50 years at this rate. He plans on putting down some pine straw at the base. Any other recommendations? Yes. Get some azalea, camellia, holly food, the stuff in the bag that is acidic making, and use that as well as your mulch, and I think you'll be well set for the summer. The soil looks good. The plant looks good. I think you just need now to give it a boost so that it can get going. And if it's droughty, y'all, I saw a soaker hose at a really discount store yesterday for $5. Don't tell me you can't afford a soaker hose. Go find one and put that under there. Greg wouldn't tell me that, but somebody might. And put that under there. And literally, if it gets as dry this summer and hot as we have had it last summer, and even the summer before was pretty hot, use it every week on that plant. You'll be glad that you did. Where does mama source seeds if they're not locally available? Things that are not locally available depends on what I'm looking for. I love Renee's Garden Seeds. I really love Baker's Creek as well. Andrea brought me some seeds from there, and I'm about to sow those in another zinnia patch. If all these zinnias come up, y'all, I'm going to be in really good shape for butterflies by the end of the summer. There's so many of them. But it depends on what you're looking for. Renee's Garden Seeds, Johnny's Select Seeds in Maine, and Baker Creek are probably my three favorites, unless you're talking about tomatoes and peppers. So that's a different. That's different. There's some really great seed companies in Florida that are basically just tomato things. It's fun. Fun. Oh, these look great. Really, really lovely, Jeff. This is wonderful. Your tomatoes look beautiful. Gorgeous, gorgeous. That's going to be some fun. As he says, let the games begin. This is where we are chasing the tomatoes. You understand, if you let a tomato plant wilt, it's never going to be quite as good as it would have been. It doesn't mean it's going to die. It doesn't mean it won't make tomatoes. But your attention to it is part of what keeps that tomato healthy and happy and growing at what is known in horticulture as a thrifty pace. That means the cells are multiplying at the rate that we would expect them to. Plants are growing at a rate that they can support. First of all, you don't need 8 feet of top and 2 inches of roots, you know what I mean? So we have that particular part of it, but it's also the expected rate, so that means you're not over-fertilizing and you're not under-fertilizing. Color is good, the leaves look great. It's a real good setup, real, real nice setup. Just beautiful. Oh, yeah, olive trees. I saw those somewhere myself. Mm-hmm. I sure did. What do I think about olives? They said they're good for zone 8, but they don't like below 20 degrees. And that's what I'm talking about. Our understanding of things that get nipped, things that get bitten underneath 20 degrees or underneath whatever temperature, you know, lower than that, set them back. And so if I'm going to grow an olive tree that says the label tells me or the variety tells me that it is vulnerable under 20 degrees and I'm in Jackson, Mississippi or, you know, somewhere else in the center of zone 8, I'm still going to grow it in a container or I'm going to be prepared to cover it up. There are pop-up greenhouses that you can get and take out and literally put on top of a tree until it gets to be about 10 feet tall. Hopefully by then you would know whether or not it was going to be hardy. But olives are a big deal. So are the hardier avocados coming into our area and becoming a big deal. So just always remember, find out the variety, find out the temperature range, and accommodate it. If you need to, for example, put this plant on the south side of your house and be prepared to cover it up, you'll be able to keep it 2 or 3 degrees warmer than you would be able to do on the north side of your house, and certainly warmer than you would be able to do with no protection. Okay? Okay. Hey, Paula, good morning. It's just really a nice day. Really nice. Oh, my goodness. Hey, Patricia. Patricia's in Van Cleve, and she has got... Oh, good. She's got unfortunate brown ground crickets. They're a mess. Let me look at something. I have an idea about that, but I need to check on something during the next break to make sure I'm giving you the right piece of advice. And she planted the cucumbers. Good. The tomatoes are doing well. You know, there's always something. I noticed yesterday I have great big pots with tomatoes in them, and they also have squash in them because peaches brought me more squash. now that I can't grow squash, I'm going to have a lot of squash. I hope that actually happens. We'll see. But in any event, the squirrels are very curious because these are in a different spot than the others are, where I've always grown tomatoes in pots in one place, but now I've put them in another place. And oh, my goodness, that thing came down there. He sat on the edge of that limb, bent it down. He wanted to jump on the tomato cage so much. I was so glad I was out there to yell at him. The squirrels are as big a pest for me because they just tear stuff up. On the other hand, you know, what are you going to do? They live here. What are you going to do? I know people tell me I should learn to enjoy having them for meals, but I live in the city. I can't do that, first of all. But second of all, I wouldn't, you know. Let's see. The hardy begonia that you're looking for is one that I'm looking for, too. So if anybody has any cuttings of that, let me know, and we will share them around. This is a rare thing, but it is a hard plant to find. This is one that has... It doesn't, I can tell you from experience, it does not take 3 nights in the lower teens very well, because that's what killed mine. I didn't have a cutting going. I didn't have it in a container. I had it in the yard, and it was a lovely stand right up until it wasn't. That same weather that particular year also did in my coral nymph salvias, which had been there for a number of years. These are things that are not supposed to be perennial, but they are in some settings, and in zone 8 is one of them. I hope somebody does have those. But it's a big leaf, round leaf begonia, and it has just a classic pinkish white flower on it, and it is a very, very, very hardy plant. So if you've got some, let me know. We'll be happy to pass that word along. Or if you've seen some in a garden center, even better, let us know. Or at a plant sale. My goodness, at the plant sales. Y'all, it's not going to be me. But somebody needs to organize an actual calendar of all of them just within Mississippi, Louisiana, Alabama, maybe Tennessee, because there's so many plant sales that you can't even keep them all on a calendar or keep them. If I was here to tell you all about them, I would literally be telling you about them and nothing else. Can't do all of that. But anyway, somebody wrote and asked me about winterberry this week, and I hadn't thought about winterberry in quite some time. I like it. It's a shrubby, stubby, sometimes kind of plant that I really like a lot. It has the question was about, do I have to have two in order to get the berries, because the berries are beautiful. Yes, it takes difficult soils really well. It is a native tree shrub plant. It's an ilex. It is a holly, winterberry, Ilex verticillata. And I really like it, but yes, you have to have male and female plants so that you can get the berries. It's a beautiful hedge in that case, can be pruned a whole bunch. But different ones are, it's one of the plants, one of the things that can be planted where other things won't make it. If you have, for instance, a slightly lowered area that's going to be a little bit drier and a little bit wetter all the time, winterberry can handle it. If the soil is just a little bit messed up over on, the side of the garage, for example, and you're not really into building a bed there, that's a good place for a plant like winterberry because it can take the conditions. Native plants, just like any other, need to be conditioned into their spot. Now, I'm not saying you should just plant it out there and forget it and it'll do great. The first couple of years of any plant like that, you do have to give it some attention. And in this case, what the attention that you'll be giving it, of course, is just enough water to survive and a little bit of fertilizer. Maybe some pruning, but maybe not even that. Really, really nice plant. I walked past a pile of palm fronds. It looked like mostly sago, but I think there might have been some windmill fronds. I said, somebody has really been out here neatening up their yard. And sure enough, turn around and look, and you can see down the side of these people's house where there's sagos and windmill palms headed into the back of the property. And they really look a lot better. You can tell if they had taken all that brown off, it was time to do that. If you've got lower fronds on plants like that and they're entirely brown and you don't like the way they look and you're tired of it, go ahead and cut them off. It's fine. On the other hand, if it's yellow or brown in the center, for example, of a sago palm or even a real palm, you need to think a little bit harder before you start cutting on it because you may just need a little bit of fertilizer. Mark is sending us his green beans in the planter. That looks nice. Oh, I love this. Great idea. Mark's in Union. He is using, y'all know what wattle fences are. Wattles are where we cut the twiggy growth out of stands of plants, and then people will take them and weave them together. And you make a little wattle fence. It might be, you think about Mr. McGregor's garden. You know, it was only about a foot and a half tall fence, and these were wattled together. They're little sticks and things that are not really, they're not great for anything else. You're not going to root a plant with them. And, you know, you got enough stuff to burn already. Why not make a wattle fence? You can also make bent wood trellises using these kinds of things. In this particular case, Mark is using sweet gum tree sprouts, to make green bean poles. They look great to grow his green beans up. They look terrific. That's a perfect use for them. And, of course, some of them even have side branches, which the beans will appreciate greatly. It's kind of like trellising. Very good idea, Mark. Thank you. Let me see now. I'll have to figure that one out. I'm going to read that one in a minute. Thank you. Okay. Good grief, I haven't given you the Paul report. I may have to hold on to that for a little while. Remind me to do that. I will get with that. I don't know how to tell y'all this, but today is Lima Bean Respect Day. So if we're not having lima beans and cornbread, who are we? What are we about anyway? I don't think it's Twinkie Pie Day, but we'll talk about that later. Stick around, y'all. We'll be back. Open up the window, let some air to this room. I
think of mama's choking from the smell of stale perfume. And the cigarette you're smoking about to scare me half to death. Open up the window, let me catch my breath.
Mama told me not to come. Mama told me not to come. She said that ain't no way to have fun. Son, that ain't no way to have fun. Son, son, son.
Are you looking for a contractor for your new home or remodel? Go licensed. Unlicensed contractors may try to convince you that pulling your own permit can save you money, but they may do shoddy work, or in some cases, no work at all, costing you far more in the long run. Protect yourself and your investment by comparing estimates from three licensed contractors. Remember, go licensed.
For more information, contact the Mississippi State Board of Contractors at msboc.us.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms.
Gov. Tell mama and all the folks back home. Sometimes a man just feels he's got to make it alone. Tell mama why I'm leaving so soon. Because this life I lead has got me sick to.
Y'all have the greatest questions. This is so much fun. Talking about the mole crickets. Mole crickets eat a lot of things, and if they become a problem for you, as they are oftentimes in along the Gulf Coast particularly, people are tempted to just go out and put the, you know, do literally throw stuff onto the beds and try and control the mole crickets. They actually do some good, okay? Their waste products are not as necessarily as wonderful as those that worms create, but they do a pretty good job, like the worms do, of digesting other organic matter, and they do produce a certain compostable byproduct that many people like to have in their flower beds. They're not the, when they begin to eat your plants is the problem, of course, and there's one wasp that eats them, you know, that will sting them, and then therefore they their babies grow inside and whatnot, and they can't survive. But partridge pea is about the one plant that I know to plant in an area that will attract that wasp. However, there are a lot of things you can do in the garden space itself. There's always, you may remember seeing when you were a kid, and you don't see it so much anymore, but you'd see somebody's house, and then it would be like from here to, you know, the corner before it looked like they had the vegetable garden. In my grandfather's case, it was behind the garage. It was as far back behind the carport as he could put the first garden that I ever really played in a lot. And the reason they separated it like that was the same reason that they put the gardens uphill from the cows and the horses and the pigs, okay, was first of all for safety. Wind and those things are important, but the actual physical movement of stuff is equally important. So it's just stuff to think about. Where's the garden located? How crowded is the space around it? Are you keeping the weeds pulled around the garden and out of the garden? All those things are ways to keep the crickets from becoming a bigger problem than they would be. And frankly, they have a better impact on other things, too. We talk about plant spacing. I'm one of those folks that you probably know just as I do. We tend to put things too close together because we want to use the space more efficiently. I always have this vision of French double-digging gardens and intensive layerings and things. Well, it doesn't actually work as well in places like ours where the insects and the diseases are just looking for a leaf attached to another leaf on another plant to move themselves across the line of all of your plants. So we need to have good air circulation, not only for pollination, but also for pest prevention. So all those things are kind of importantly. Ron is removing lima beans. from whatever they're in this case. Oh, I'm so sorry. Somebody treated you badly with lima beans at some point in your childhood, no doubt. Goodness gracious. Cicadas. Okay, here's a question about cicadas. The biggest, what do cicadas do? Cicadas are just, frankly, trying to make more cicadas, okay? They come out of the ground. They've been down there for a long time, 13 years, 17 years, however long that particular swarm has, 7 years and some. And we do have some that emerge every year. You hear them. You can think of it as the sound of, you know, people singing and dancing and carrying on. Maybe they're at the skating rink. What they're trying to do is find a date. So they're not that interested in your plants. They'll hang on to them because it's convenient. They need to shed their skins, and you'll find the skins attached to all sorts of things, depending on how many cicadas there are. But they're not actually eating the plants to any extent. The biggest thing that the cicadas do is inspire people to be crazy and act like they should be scared of them. There's nothing to be scared of. The probably the worst thing is the sound they make under your feet when you walk across them. A few years ago, one of my cats got one stuck in her ear. That was kind of exciting. It wasn't the actual insect, it was just the skin. So, anyway, I say, let's make t-shirts. You're right, Trey. Bluebirds love crickets. Putting up bluebird houses is another one of those things that I should have remembered to say that you should do, because the bluebirds are crazy about them. So the Practical Gardener has a good article about the crickets, and it does include a lot of these things that I've just talked about. My personal part of it is it's another reason why we don't put the compost heap right next to the garden, you know, because we want to be able to get another case where there's some space out there. I have had crickets really take over. And not the type that I want to fish with, you know. So you have to get them out of there, do a few things, and it works out. It always works out. Gardening is one of those things that there's always another way to do it. I have rescued the flocks that I thought I had killed, so I'm feeling pretty good about myself. It has multiple branches and many flowers on it now. It doesn't have the, you know, scores. I used to have a walkway lined with it. That's not there anymore, but it's doing pretty good. I'm happy about that. And when we have things that don't work in gardening, we just pick up and move on and take the next one. Or we go, like I have done, and baby a few things and keep them, get them to go ahead and go. This is a really, really good time, rain notwithstanding. It's not going to rain everywhere all the time for the next several days. So when you get out, you may not want to pull up weeds if the soil is too wet. But you can certainly do a little of the grooming and trimming that we need to do and seldom get time for. I'm talking, of course, about bulbs that have died back or close to it. You can do a little trimming there. There's always another shrub, it seems, that never has leafed out. I still have a couple of those that I need to deal with. But I'm happy to say that the hydrangeas have recovered. The top part that I knew was dead, and I took it off. Now we've got leaves all the way up to the tops of the stems, and even a few flowers are starting to form. So I'm very happy about that. It's not the big green. It's not the big big leaf macrophylla. It's not the big leaf. But it is a really lovely little hydrangea. It's fun. Let's see. Can I talk to Stephen? Do we need to ask him to wait?
No, we can start here.
All right. Hey, Stephen. What's going on?
Good morning. I got a couple of three questions about, I'm trying to grow an orchard, and is it okay to plant a whole different variety of trees all together?
Usually. You mean like three different apples?
Like I say, I'm planting some blueberries, I'm planting avocados, lemon trees, orange trees, mm-hmm. Some olive trees. And just a whole different variety of stuff. And some people said you can't plant all those close together.
Well, they all need their individual space, and they all need to be planted with their kin, so to speak, for pollination purposes. But that's about right. The only restrictions that I would have for you. Blueberries are going to be more like a hedge, you know, and they're not going to be so much a tree. So you may want to put them on the outside like a hedge, because that's going to be what they're going to form anyway, eventually. And okay. But I don't know why. Or maybe they're talking about cross-pollination with citrus or something? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's what they was trying to tell me. I said, well, I don't know. I'll call Garden Mama.
Well, if I was laying it out, I probably would have all the apples together in one place, and then I would probably sprinkle the citrus throughout other things because they don't actually need to be with their friends necessarily as much as plums and apples.
One of the trees that I bought, it said it was self-pollinating. How mm-hmm. does that work?
Has male and female flowers both. I'll talk about it a little bit later. A lot of trees are self-pollinating, but they do better if they have a friend next to them that also puts out more pollen because it's more attractive. But anyway, I'll talk about that.
So if I buy one, I need to buy another one.
I would, yeah. I always feel like that's insurance. Okay. In case I mess it up.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. I'll talk more about it in the next hour. It's good to hear from you. We have really hit the truth here. Time is, in fact, tight, y'all. Let's stay with Booker T for a minute, and we'll be right back.
Think of all the comforts your family enjoys around your home. When you include propane appliances throughout your home, you can have even greater comfort from endless hot water to softer clothing and cozier heat on cold winter days. With an all-propane home, you'll also enjoy greater efficiency and energy savings compared to all-electric homes. Go to PERC.com and ask why propane. The answer will be clear. Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit MSPropane.com.
Are you a business owner looking for help with HR benefits and payroll? MWG Employer Services offers a wide range of services and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget.
I was so overwhelmed with HR stuff. MWG Employer Services took all the stress out of it and even set up my payroll. I couldn't be happier.
MWG Employer Services is here to help you succeed. Call us today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWGEmployerServices.com.
At Key Constructor.
From the trees over your head to the lawn you hate to mow and everything green in between, Garden Mama's here to help you keep on growing. Still the empress of everything green. Here's your horticulture maven, Garden Mama Nellie Neal. On Super Talk Mississippi.
There's a lot to say, isn't there? Fingers are working, ears are working. We got it all today. Thank you so much. I think we have just broken the record for the first hour in terms of questions. We say real questions, real gardeners, real questions, hopefully real answers. I think I'm doing all right today. I haven't fallen apart too much. A couple of other notes I wanted to bring to you in case you're just tuning in. Some of the topics today have been self-pollinating trees, the pink phlox that I love so much, azaleas, roses, and tomatoes. Guess what? It's spring. Big surprise. I'm happy to say that I have another Your Advice Worked. Appreciate you very, very much. The clover looks great. That's good news. Really good news. There are always kinds of questions that we really want to try and figure these things out sometimes. I love this. The three older, fairly tall, 3-foot-tall bushes in front of the house. They seem to be dead after the ice storm 2 years ago, but they all have leaves and they have bloomed. The one in the middle only has foliage at the top of the plant, and the middle is looking dead. Now, you're right, it is an eyesore in the front of the yard, front of the house. So here's the deal. If you don't like it and you don't want to fool with it, this is a fine time to dig it up, get it out of there, stick those in a container in the backyard and see what happens to them, or put them on the steps and let somebody else take them away, you know. But here's the thing. If you want to rejuvenate them, the same thing is true, just in a proportional difference, as for the great big ones that Greg in Yazoo City is rejuvenating right now. You're going to take those plants down, by a good chunk. In other words, if you've got an area where there's just the leaves on the top, we see this a lot in hedges of ligustrum, for example. And when we take the, take that hard prune on the top, you're maybe going to leave two or three leaves on a stem. It's not going to be much there in terms of green area. That action stimulates the plant that if it possibly can, it wants some of its buds below to warm up and get growing. So if you stimulate it that way by pruning and then accompany that with water and fertilizer now, water whenever it's needed, but fertilizer now and again in June, you're going to find that if it can grow, it will. So if you want to give it one shot, and then if it doesn't work, then next fall you replace them. But if you don't like the way they look, and they're not healthy and they're not happy, they're your plants. You can replace them anytime you want to. If you want to rejuvenate it, now's the time to do that too. So cut off as much of it as you can, you know, without, you don't want to go all the way down to sticks if you can help it. But I have done that before with azaleas, and even then they do tend to grow back. It's just a real slow process. So give yourself the option of rejuvenating them or letting them go. It's just a plant. You can do that. I love the clover. That's really pretty. I'm happy about that. Self-pollinating plants. Here's the deal. Some plants only produce the male flowers. Some plants, and then they have another part of their world that produces the female flowers. Okay? But some plants have both on the same plant. Let me talk pecans because they're probably the most dramatic. Pecans produce male and female, but they don't produce them at the same time, and they're not timely for pollination a lot of the times. That's why when we go to plant a pecan orchard, we mix varieties, except for a very few that can be counted on to pollinate themselves. We plant a mixture of things with proper pollination timings. Most other things are not as complicated as that. When we go all the way to perhaps the simplest end of it, we look at native persimmon trees. Native persimmon trees have both male and female. They pollinate themselves and they make fruit. But if you got two of them, you're going to have a synergistic effect and you will have more fruit than you would have had with either individual alone. So that's why the self-pollinating is something is absolutely worth talking about. Where's the pollen? When does it fall? And does it get where it needs to get? Those are all questions that obviously need to be put together, whether you're planting an orchard here or, as I understand, that one's going to be in Florida. So it's important. I think because of maintenance concerns, you do want to draw this out in the first place and give yourself the amount of space it takes for each tree to mature, and then that in turn gives you the space for each species that you're growing. So I like it. I think it sounds like a great idea. Really, really good idea. What did I miss? Somebody asked me, who is the drummer on Time is Tight? You're right. That's a great drum piece. That's a classic. That for Booker T and the MG's first drummer was Al Jackson Jr. And nobody ever quite had that sound. You are correct about that. I will find out. Aw, thank you, Joe. Joe likes classical gas. What time? You'll tell him. I don't know what time that is.
The out is going to be...
The rebroadcast is out.
Well, yeah, you can hear the out, which is also got the classical
He's
gas.
He's looking for the rebroadcast of the show tomorrow.
Well, it'll...
Isn't it noon? But I don't really know that.
Not quite sure exactly on when the video drops, but I know you can... get the audio pretty quickly. It just takes the time for the program to actually work its way through the download process. So it should be pretty soon after the show if you want audio
on. A lot of people riding home from church and hear it on the radio.
Yeah. So I think I'm not sure the replay schedule, but I know you can go out to the app and get it yourself. If you're wanting it on demand, you can do that anytime.
You can have more of me in your pocket than you ever wanted to have for hours and hours. Drive you crazy. Listen to all of that. You know, there's things I can do really well, and there's things I can't. And I'm in the process of trying to get the right chord for the right thing, to get the right music, to get it into my radio, to get it, you know. I've gone through all the CDs in the house now. I went through that process because I hadn't listened to them in so long. And I'm about over the ones that make me cry. I put them aside. The other ones I still listen to. But there's... It's just funny how many more ways there are to get music and to get information and to get Garden Mama, you know, than we ever had before. It's great. Oh, thank you, Bubba. You're so sweet. Appreciate you. That's very kind. That's very, very nice. This is such a great morning. Y'all are just terrific.
I did. I included a few pictures of the transplanted irises that I had.
I was going to ask you.
I put them up. There's, you know, they turned out really well. I sent you a couple of the photos the other day.
They're beautiful
and
flowers.
And my question, and I wanted to throw that on air because some people may be having the same, as far as having that super thick, almost ebony pencil size crayon bud and the darkness of the flower. You know, mine are real pastel. They're beautiful, but I've seen them where they're much darker, probably almost the same flower, or even heavier buds or more even leaves coming out. The other tuft had like five or six really healthy petals come out. These that I transplanted seem to have three really healthy with two that tried.
They're trying. They're working on it.
So your point in trying to just get them healthier and continue to...
They just need some fertilizer.
They just need a little fertilizer. Is there anything condition-wise that they enjoy
well,
the most?
Well, there's the ones that you're growing are able to have their... You know, we grow bearded iris with that fat rhizome sticking out of the soil. Mm-hmm. But yours are not like that. You're growing virginica. You're growing the classic,
virginica,
I think. Yeah. And it doesn't need that. But what it does need is to be a little bit damper probably than it's staying, because it's not Louisiana Irish, can't grow it in the ditch.
Yeah.
But you do need to make sure that it stays moist in a dry summer. And it does need some fertilizer. And the fertilizers that there used to be a thing called perennial food for plants. And everybody hated the name of it because people in horticulture don't like to call it food, and other people that like to call it food don't want to call it horticulture. It's a whole thing. But if you're looking for a complete fertilizer, you're looking for one that has nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium, but it also has all of the trace elements. And that's what complete means. Balanced in the name of a fertilizer means that they're going to be the same numbers, 15, 15, 15. You are looking for a complete and unbalanced fertilizer because you want lower first number. You got plenty of nitrogen in that soil. Your leaves are bright colors, but you're trying to grow buds for next year, so you need phosphorus, potassium, and trace elements. It may be called perennial food, maybe called shrub food, but it's going to be like 4 on the nitrogen and then 15 and 12 or something like that. It's going to be a wider difference in the numbers between the first and the second and third.
It's going to be kind of like a Powerball setup or a Mega Millions.
You could literally, there are people who bet those numbers. There truly are.
I'm going to ask Meg about that.
You've
got people that they're gardeners. They put in their fertilizer numbers.
They do.
That is awesome.
16, 24, 24. I've known that from people. They would put 23. But the point is, I've known people that used any number. I don't play this, so I'm not judging at all. But I understand that there are numbers that are more important to you, and so you play them. And I get that. It's fascinating to me.
You would be a fertilizer number generator instead of using random.
I would be more like the number of species. Yeah. I would want the number of species.
It was funny. The things you learned. Cross the other day was sitting in for Paul, and we had somebody talking about computer science. And he said, you know, I wish I'd have paid better attention in science class. And but he goes, I do remember kingdom, phylum, class, order, family, genus, species. He goes, I don't know why, but you see, I remember
it's
that.
Stuck.
I mean, it's stuck. No. It's like, he goes, I don't know why I remember it, but the things you learn in science
class. The same reason
class.
I can recite the Greek alphabet for no good reason. Those things, and it is true that sometimes the things that you have to force into your head are the ones that actually stay there. You can't necessarily remember the conversion of liters to gallons unless you've ever had to do that, you know. And then suddenly it makes sense. Really, that's pretty. Summit. Chris has got some gorgeous tomatoes. Those are lovely. Very, very nice. Congratulations. I'm happy about that. Let's see. Ooh, this is a good question. I bought three different varieties of blueberry bushes in bloom that have set fruit. If I plant them now, will they drop the berries? They might. The shock might knock them off. I would go ahead and if you can, if they have enough body to the plant to let them ripen, I would go ahead and do that and then plant them. But that being said, if they look really hard and tiny, they may not develop anyway because if your roots are real tight in that container. So it's kind of a toss up as to whether to do it or not. I'm worried this year. I'm not worried. I'm not going to predict either, but I do think there's a good chance we will end up having an incredibly hot summer. And because of that, anything that can be transplanted sooner is better than later. Okay, so if you want to let them mature, do that, but then plant them immediately. If they look like just little nubs of blueberries and they're still very, very, very hard, they're not likely to be knocked off, and I would go ahead and plant. That's my slightly sideways information about blueberries. Oh, that's really nice. This is a camellia, and it has a thing on it. A real scientific way of looking at it. All this is what happens in some plants, and particularly woody plants more than anything, any others, is that we have insects that will sometimes create a little place to live that is at the disadvantage of the plant. So all you need to do is cut that off and don't drop it on the ground, get it out of your garden. But the insects are probably already matured and out of there by the time we get that. By the time the structure is big enough to see, the insects have pretty much already moved on, and it's not going to hurt the plant. They're just taking advantage of it. Oh dear. Now I'm going to have to get into it now. I knew this was going to come up this morning. I don't know if that's a smilax flower. Unfortunately, I truly have never let my smilax bloom, and it doesn't look like the leaves. Smilax is too thorny for me, but it does not look like it to me. I could be wrong, but if the leaves I'm seeing are attached to the flowers, it's something else. It might be one of the wild clematis, but I can't really tell. On the other hand, I'm going to disagree with you about privets blooming, because the noise you can hear of me trying to keep my voice intact and as well as my nose has to do with the amount of privet that are all in bloom. Jackson, Utica, what's going on this morning?
Okay, well, I've got some friends up north, and they send me pictures of their beautiful flowering tobacco.
Mm-hmm.
So I wanted to try them down here. And I ordered some seeds, and the seeds are so tiny, I thought I would get coated seeds. So I planted them. Nothing, 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 nothing. And then I ran upon an article that said they need sunlight to germinate.
Mm-hmm.
And lo and behold, I ordered some more, and these were just little dusty. They're dust. I mean,
yeah, it's true, they are.
And the little seed flag. And just pressed them into the soil, mm-hmm. and gave them light, mm-hmm. and they were up in like a week and a half. So what's with sunlight and seeds?
Different seeds have different conditions. Probably the other end of the story entirely would be if you want to grow a plum tree from a seed, rather, you pretty much have to put it into some damp soil, potting mix, leaf mold, something, and put it in your refrigerator, because you have to mimic a cold treatment before it's going to be able to sprout. Okay, so everything's got something about it that devolves from wherever they were native. So, for example, in the case of something like flowering tobacco or impatiens or some of these other things, begonias that have these T90 seeds, I mean, and they're dust. You can barely see them at all.
Yeah.
My impression is that it's because when the flower first began to make seed, it needed to make them where they could sprout. So, in other words, there were either a whole lot of other things that were going to interfere with them, and so they had to just fall on the ground and be able to sprout in the sun. Or because so many things were likely to eat them, they had to fall and sprout really fast in the sun, or else the seeds would get eaten, you know. So there's some reason in the story of that particular plant. I don't know of a book where people have worked those things out, but you do occasionally hear about the native origins of things. For instance, there's a bean that's tropical that has the most corkscrew flower you've ever seen. It's absolutely magnificent. And it developed that way, apparently, because in order to get pollinated, it had to attract the insects. There's many more plants that need pollination in the tropics than there are insects to do the work. So this one developed something where the only insect that could actually fit in the tube was the one that was going to be able to pollinate it, as opposed to one that would get in there and get stuck and not be able to do the job. So
I want to grow it.
I'll look up the name of it. It's in the Fragarias, but I wrote about it a couple of times because I thought it was so interesting. I'll have to get you the actual name of it. But we got to step aside for now. I hope that's enough on this particular thing. But flowering tobacco is beautiful. Thank you for calling today, Jack.
Thank you so much.
All right, now. I don't know if it's raining at Jack's, but I'm looking at Linda's Peggy Martin. I'm really happy. Stick around.
Be beautiful, Mississippi. Did you know it's illegal to go topless in Mississippi? One way to stop the litter in its tracks is to safely secure and cover materials in the backs of trucks and trailers. So put a top on it. Almost all the litter you see on Mississippi roadways is accidental. And those tiny little cigarette butts flicked out of your vehicle could cost you that $250 fine for littering. For more info on how to help us keep our roadways clean, visit keepmsbeautiful.com. Be beautiful, Mississippi.
When it comes to returning money to Mississippians, Treasurer David McRae is on a roll. He's already returned almost $100 million in unclaimed money to Mississippians through the Treasury's Unclaimed Money Program. Now, he's refocused the state's college savings initiatives, Max and Impact, to emphasize technical, trade, and teacher-focused career jobs and skills Mississippi needs. Don't let another day go by without getting a jump start on a career or getting back the money that's yours. Visit Treasurer David McRae at treasury.ms. .gov.
Sometimes the oldies are goodies. What can I tell you? Great stuff. Y'all are busy. Goodness gracious. This is so much fun. The Rankin County Master Gardeners had a good sale, and Andrea wants y'all to all to know that she's got a truck car full of plants from it. Beautiful, beautiful flat. Another really good question. I have shade. Got a koi pond, and this is in Greenwood. I planted jasmine on one side. What can I do on the other side? And I'm sending pictures of the pond. Yay. I love that. The koi ponds are particularly lovely by themselves. In other words, the fish and the care that you give to them. So when you begin to plant the edges of them and you're in that kind of shade, you want hostas and you want cast iron plants and other things that are, 2 to 3 feet tall at the most, because you always want to be able to see into the pond, but you also want to be able to have a nice backdrop around it. So those are a couple of good suggestions, I think. I've seen them in around koi ponds in the shade, and they look lovely. But I also want you to look for the plant ajuga. It may be called bugle weed or bugle bead, A-J-U-G-A. It is a flat ground cover plant, but it also puts up a little bit of a flower. It would be a nice complement in that area. It's a lovely, lovely thing. So those are my three choices in that particular circumstance. I really do think that you got the ideal spot for some hostas. And there's some beautiful cast iron plants that are literally tough as nails, and you can plant those perhaps in the background and then move into hostas and then have your pond. It'd be lovely. I like that. Really good idea. My goodness, this is pretty. Y'all, that Peggy Martin rose is just gorgeous. Here's another one, too. I love this. 30 feet into a pecan tree, and I do not know her name. I'm sorry, but that's a beautiful, beautiful white rose. They call it the white wedding rose because it blooms in the spring, and it's got beautiful bunches of white flowers. There are a number of people who specialize in trying to identify roses that we don't know the names of. I'm not one of them because I'm not good enough at it. Sometimes when I get up close to it, I can help you get close, but I can't really tell you. Interestingly enough. Oh, beautiful. Byzantine gladiolas are in bloom. You know, Sue, what I would do is take some good pictures of this and as well as the leaves. And this is where I would actually start talking to the Old Rose Society people. There are old garden rose societies in several places in the state, but that organization of people is where you're going to find somebody who knows that rose, and they probably live 5 miles from you. You know, they'll remember something that somebody told them, and that'll lead you to be able to find it and then research it. But I love that. That's really pretty. Byzantine gladiolas are in bloom in Madison. Thank you, Andrea. That's lovely. Just beautiful. Bill planted bush beans in Poplarville. Hey, y'all. They sprouted, and now some of them look like this. Not too good. I would plant more. I really would. I think they got nipped by the freeze, and frankly, bush beans don't have that much hardiness to them. They're almost entirely chlorophyll, so I would probably go ahead and replant. I'm going to say too that your soil looks very even and very good. You may want to add a little bit of organic matter in that space. You don't want to fertilize the beans because they're going to take the nitrogen from the air. But the space itself might be able to use a little organic matter at the end of the season. Okay. That's nice. That is so nice. Really pretty, Kenny. I think you're on your way. Very nice. And I'm not going to say anything about silk flowers. Not good or bad. Let's see. I have a question for you about our Confederate rose. Do we cut it down every year, or will it sprout back from the original plant? Usually doesn't sprout back in zone 8 where you are. Sometimes in further south, they'll at least put out a few leaves on the stems, and then you come in and cut off the part that didn't make it. But in this particular case, the Confederate rose, the hibiscus that is hardy, is root hardy. Certainly the top is not as hardy. That's why we talk about in the fall, when we do go to cut those back, if you want to propagate that Confederate rose, you cut it back before the stems freeze. So then you can root the stems in like 3-foot-long pieces. And they all will root, and then you'll have a small tree to plant in the springtime. But I would go ahead and do the scratch test on the Confederate rose canes. And if it, certainly you're going to prune a little bit off. But if they are actually dead all the way to the ground, go ahead and cut it down. You'll have some more come back from the roots. I promise. Rob wants to know, he's in Amory. Oh my goodness, that's a beautiful platter you got there. Congratulations. Would it hurt to trim a gardenia bush right now? If you don't care about the blooms, or if you have something that has already bloomed, which I don't think they have yet, but you generally want to prune gardenias right after the flowers finish, which is handy because oftentimes you want to pick the flowers. So that works out well, and you're giving it some attention anyway. It won't hurt the plant. It'll just cut off your flowers that were formed last year. Oh, goodness. Kenny, you have got leaf spot on these palm leaves, and some of that's just winter damage. I would cut off the tips, and if it reappears, that's when you may want to consider using a fungicide. The spots themselves will probably spread out, and that leaf that you're showing me will go ahead and have a problem with it, but you can inoculate with a fungicide so it doesn't progress any, if that makes sense. The ones where the tips are already burned off, you can shape them like into nice points and leave them there, but if that damage continues, then you'll know that it's a different problem. I think that's just a cold problem. The leaf spots themselves, you probably want to treat the plant with a fungicide, but you also want to be aware that some of those leaves are not going to be viable, and you'll just take them out. Better air circulation in that plant will help as well. Really nice, though. I just love those. I love palm trees. I think they're so much fun. Wow, well, today we are going to replant beans, and today we have a lot of things going on around here, don't we? I have a couple of other ideas for you that you may or may not be interested in taking advantage of, but, you know, somebody close to you might. Oh, that's lovely. Y'all have such pretty pictures. Really lovely things. I do love a koi pond. That's fun. Anyway. I every year you see them, and I'm not the person that's going to go over and talk to the guy that's got a crew of landscape people out there building mulch volcanoes, but I have been known, if I see the name of the company on the side of the truck, to call and leave them a message because, you know, they're all busy. They're not answering their phones. And just say, have you considered mulch volcanoes are a harbor for, fire ants and termites? Here's the thing. Mulch is a wonderful thing. I began the show today talking about how important it is. But when we go beyond the point where when we're basically just trying to stack up some more stuff or use up some more product, we're not doing the plant any good and we're actually doing ourselves and the plant some harm. Here's why. Mulch at 1 inch deep will protect your plant from the vagaries of different levels of water on a different day. It will suppress some weeds. It will also give a little bit better air circulation around the base of the plant because you have to get up under there to do that. And those are all really good things. On the other hand, if we, 2 inches around some plants is really good, especially shallow rooted things like azaleas and figs and that sort of stuff. That's great. On the other hand, if the mulch is 2 inches tall and the perennial's crown is below that, you're basically just moving water into that crown and it will rot eventually in most cases. So that's not good. And when you have mulch volcanoes, you've gone the other direction. You've got a tree and you've pulled the mulch up 3, 4, 10, 12, more than a foot up the trunk. Okay. If you ask someone why they're doing this, they'll tell you it's because the rain washes the mulch, and so they want it to be able to, they want it to be able to keep its mulch. They're not going to be back for a few months to tend to this place. It doesn't really happen that fast. And the mulch volcano itself is the perfect environment. It's dry enough for fire ants, wet enough for diseases. It has both of those unfortunate qualities going for it. And we got enough problems without creating more of our own. So let's hold off on the mulch volcanoes, okay? Okay. Thank you very much for that. It never works. People still do it. But when I see my first ones each year, I always want to remind you that that doesn't need to be your yard. Absolutely does not need to be your yard. I like koi ponds. I'm not going to raise fish probably again in my life, but I have to say that they are some of the most fun to watch. And they are like other pets that will respond to your efforts. The koi will come to you and gather on the side when you're about to feed them. And, they've got some interesting behaviors that are really fun to watch. I have been working on all of my herbs. I've got the thyme is in bloom. I'll probably send pictures of that next week so everyone can see that. I do like the taste of thyme in bloom. If basil goes into bloom, it's going to taste like licorice. If we end up having parsley go into bloom, it gets bitter because that's when it's forming seed and it has bolted. A lot of that's bolting now, as a matter of fact, not at my place because I do keep them picked off. And I plant parsley throughout the year because I know I'm going to want to have it. And unlike basil, I can grow parsley in the wintertime, so I have a little bit of all of it. But I also want you to be aware that there's not any reason not to have more plants, particularly herbs, in containers. If you find that your oregano is getting too wet, staying too wet, grow it in a clay pot. Put it in a wooden box with a bunch of holes in it. Do something else that changes the environment. Don't give up on it. Mabel in Jackson. Good morning, Mabel. How's everything?
I'm doing all right. And you?
Doing fine. Thank you.
Yeah. I have some okra plants. I planted the seeds in a pot,
mm-hmm.
and they don't come up. And I don't know how long I'm going to let them stay in there.
Let them get, they put that first little set of leaves and then they put one set of real leaves on them after that first little seed set. As soon as they get that first set of leaves on them and they're looking like they're going to make the second set, you should lift them out and transplant them. That's excellent. Congratulations.
And then I want to ask you about, I want to put some coffee grounds around my
Mm-hmm.
Now my tomatoes, they got some little tomatoes on them.
Yay.
Should I put it Should I put some more fertilizer around my tomato plant?
Once you got fruit on them, I don't want to put any fertilizer on until those fruit are about to get taken off the plant, unless the plant looks bad. If it looks like it needs fertilizer, mm-hmm. I'll give it a little bit, not much, but I'll give it about a half a dose. But as long as the plant looks good when it's got fruit on it, I'm not going to fertilize it.
Okay. And they're leaning, so bam, she want to go out there and tie them up, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Put sticks around them and tie them up. Mm-hmm. It's not right for her to go and do that.
Oh, yeah. That's absolutely. That's a great idea. Absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay. Okay.
It's good to hear from you.
I ain't heard you in so long.
I'm glad you're back.
Yeah, I had to find you. Get my daughter to stretch it out.
Good. Tell her hey for us. Thank you for listening. Appreciate you.
I will.
Talk to you again soon. Thanks, Mabel. You know, that's true. I'll confess, y'all've got to spread the word. If y'all will tell five people that I'm on the radio on Saturday morning, I'll be better served. Do you know that I've heard three times in the last 2 weeks, oh, so-and-so used to listen to you when you were on the radio. Hello, I'm on the radio every Saturday. We promote this thing, but I need your help to promote it more. Tell three friends this week. Tell them, I got something for you. You're going to like this. Tune into Garden Mama. It'll be fun. You'll laugh. Gardening, they always say there's no crying in baseball. There's no crying in gardening, okay? We literally are just here to talk about real plants and real hopes and dreams and real things that we're doing to make them come true so that they don't have to just be hopes. They can be realities. That chiminea is so pretty. I love that she's going to plant it again. That's so pretty. Do we still have those? People have chimeneas, don't they? Besides her, everybody.
I love them.
I think they're wonderful.
Great in the winter, especially.
I love those. Thank you very much. This is I love when a non-gardener says that they don't mind listening to me. That's really wonderful. Thank you. I'm a radio gal. And there's no question about it. There's you often wonder sometimes, how did I get into what I'm doing? Well, I know how I got into it. I went for it, and I'm just lucky it worked out, because not everything does. All right, now, for those of you who keep complaining, here is Van the Man.
Running a business is tough. If you're struggling with HR benefits and payroll, you're not alone. Many businesses just don't have the resources to keep up. That's where MWG Employer Services comes in. We provide a full range of employer services with everything from payroll to benefits to HR services and compliance, and can create a custom plan that fits your needs and budget. We're a Mississippi-based company that can help you focus on what you do best, growing your business. Call MWG Employer Services today at 601-206-7966 or go to MWG Employer Services.
An official message from Medicare.
A new law is helping me save more money on prescription drug costs. Maybe you can save too. With Medicare's Extra Help program, my premium is zero and my out-of-pocket costs are low. Who should apply? Single people making less than $23,000 a year, or married couples who make less than $31,000 a year. Even if you don't think you qualify, it pays to find out. Go to ssa.gov/extrahelp.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
Waiting on a tax return?
Bus stop, wet day, she's there, I say, please share my umbrella. Bus stop, bus go, she stays, love grows under my umbrella. All that summer we enjoyed it, wind and rain and shine. That umbrella we employed it, by August she was mine.
Every morning, yes indeed. Those Jell-O wax beans are making me so hungry. Arlene in Biloxi is showing off her first harvest, and they are beautiful. Thank you for letting us see. Looks, I'm not really sure whose plant sale where we are, but it's really wonderful, and I really appreciate seeing all that. I bet that's Rankin County because that's what it looks like, but I can't guarantee it, so I'm not going to say that. Anyway, I can't tell if that is a China berry tree because the photo is a little bit furry, and when I blew it up, it got furrier, so I can't tell you what that one is because I can't see it close enough. And yes, we do love peaches, absolutely. No question about that. Really fun stuff. All y'all, that's just great. Thank you very much. Love, love, love this little greenhouse. That is marvelous. Thank you. Yay. We have to keep that picture. You look beautiful. Thank you, Vivian. Love the greenhouse, too. But I love the Garden Mama t-shirt just as much. Yes, you too can request a Garden Mama t-shirt. The greenhouse looks great. I'm you know, we've been talking about azaleas since this very, very beginning of the show today. And Ed in Madison has another one of what I call azalea overload. There are so many things to do in this world, and if a plant just kind of looks good and takes care of itself, a lot of times we just leave it alone. Well, this one's now up to the eve of the house and has suffered a bit from this last couple of, you know, the last couple of seasons. We've had some rough weather. What to do? Okay, the azalea's finished blooming. It's been less than a month since it bloomed, so now's the time to prune it. If I've got one that doesn't look terrible but has a few problem areas, I'm going to go ahead and prune the entire thing by one third. So if it's at the eve of the house, I'm probably going to take it down, I don't know, 2-3 feet. You know, not extensively because we're not trying to rejuvenate them, this one, the way we were in Yazoo County. Okay, so in this case, you're going to take it down by about a third all over. Then look at it. Anything that's absolutely dead, you know, you do the scratch test on this cane and it is brown all the way to the ground, get all that out of there because that in turn lets the new growth come up from the ground. So we're trying to encourage new growth on any of the canes that are alive, but also from the ground to help rejuvenate the thing and keep it going for another 50 or 60 years. So that's really all you got to do. After that, it's a simple matter of water when it's dry, fertilizer now, get the azalea camellia type because that's better for that sort of plant, and then turn right around and do that same thing again in July, in June, late June, early July. You can prune it again if you need to, but ordinarily all you'll be doing at that point is watering and fertilizing, okay? But that's what to do for that. Yes, that's a Mahonia. I'm not going to tell you that it's edible. It's not on every list. It's one of the ones the birds really love, but I'm not aware of human consumption of that particular one. And can parsley be divided? Yes, it absolutely can. When you divide it, though, you're going to want to cut it back. I can tell from your picture that it's probably a good point to do that anyway. And cut it, divide it, cut it back, divide it, and you'll have a couple of plants at that point. We can't always fool parsley. Sometimes it goes ahead and bolts and makes seed. That's fine if it needs to do that. But sometimes we can fool it a little bit, and I find that the curly parsley is easier to keep going than is the flat leaf. But I like to cook with the flat leaf, so I do grow both as much as possible. Let's see. Well, that's pretty, Stephen. Thank you. Really nice. That's going to be gorgeous. Planting an orchard. That's marvelous. Oh, corkscrew vine is the only name I can locate. I didn't look very far, but I could see the flower, and I could see that it is called corkscrew vine. I do remember that. But there are other names for that. The bean plant, it's not a bean that makes beans, but it's in the bean family, and it makes this marvelous corkscrew flower so that it can be pollinated appropriately. It takes different things for different plants. That is for true. Wanted to let you know to mark your calendar for Saturday, May the 4th. From 11 to 1, Peaches and I will be rolling down to Rivers Market in Byram. We'll be there from 11 to 1. Y'all know the Rivers. Y'all know the Rivers Plant Farm. Y'all know Rivers Gardens and Greenhouse in Brandon, okay? This is their retail outlet in Byram. If you haven't ever been there, you should go because it's nice and they're sweet and it's fun. It's a same fine family, same flying shopping. In this case, it's going to be plants and products and produce and just a wide range of things because they know their stuff over there. They're on Willow Creek Lane in Byram. Peaches and I'll be there Saturday, May 4th from 11 until 1. Okay? Okay. Trying to keep all of the, at least where I'm going to be, there's a lot of events. I don't know how everybody's keeping up with them. I'm not even able to. Rusty asks, can I use cottonseed meal for my garden seed, my garden fertilizer? Yes, as long as you're trying to achieve nitrogen. In other words, it's probably most cottonseed meals that you see in a bag ready for garden use or for any kind of use are, you know, shrubs and trees too, are going to be like 10-2-2. They're going to be almost all nitrogen, that higher number. So if you're trying to grow leaves, yes. On the other hand, if you're trying to grow tomatoes, you might use something like cottonseed meal or another nitrogen source like that at the beginning, but then you would want to make sure that you've also got phosphorus and potassium so you get fruit. When we put in too much nitrogen into our systems, we end up with great big leaves and no flowers because the nitrogen is what produces the leaves. There's all kind of mnemonics and stuff that people use to memorize and learn things, but one of my very, very favorites has always been, as opposed to the things that we laugh about so often, but in the case of nitrogen, if you think of it as shoots and then roots and fruits, you end up with shoots and roots and fruits because you've got all those things that it takes, the phosphorus and potassium, to do both the roots and the fruits. Okay? Okay. It is a good product, but it is very high nitrogen. Beautiful clematis, Andrea. That's lovely. That's really, really pretty. I'm real impressed with the progress of my hellebores. Y'all know that I had about given up on them, and then I went out and worked the area just a little bit and put in just a little bit of manure and compost and gave them a little bit of attention. Didn't give them much attention at all. They look great. I'm going to have 3 plants by the time it's time for them to bloom next year if I can avoid killing them during the summer. They're under the magnolia tree. They don't get very much sun. They don't need very much sun, but they do need some water. I've decided if I would plant more things in that area, I'd probably take better care of it. So I'm going to put some hostas behind them in the deeper shade, and I'm looking for spigella. I think I'm going to have a really nice planting. That's great. Paula from Dentville has been to Rivers in Byram, and she says she's going to come see us that day because she'll be off work that day. I look forward to it. I'll bring you a T-shirt. So many things to do, so many places to go, so much fun to be had. This is, in fact, the whole world of gardening. Thank you for being part of it. Thank you for asking your questions, and thank you for being so real. See you next week.
The Garden Mama Show is a production of SuperTalk Mississippi Media. Download past episodes at supertalk.fm and contact Garden Mama anytime at mamaonair@yahoo.com. Thanks for choosing the Garden Mama Show.
We are advocacy, a century of wins, protecting private property rights, advancing technology, sustaining our land, conserving our natural resources, all to pass on to the next generation. We are the Mississippi Farm Bureau Federation, 100 years and counting. Become a member today at msfb.org.
Before heading out in your RV, go through your propane system safety checklist. Take a look at exterior vents and clear away debris and blockage. Check propane cylinders for wear and tear. Inspect all propane appliance connections thoroughly for frays and damage. Make sure your RV has a DC fire extinguisher and propane carbon monoxide and smoke detectors, and have the vehicle inspected annually. Remember, always leave repairs to the professionals. Energy for everyone. Propane. Visit mspropane.com. That's mspropane.com to learn more.
I have diabetes.
A Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.